July 24th, 2013. Madison Superintendent Jennifer Cheatham spoke at the Downtown Rotary Club.
Dr. Cheatham, thank you for speaking today. We've made a gift in your honor to Rotary International Poli Plus. Thank you so much and welcome. Good afternoon. It's an honor to be here today. I want to start by thanking Renee for having me here and for generously offering her spot on the agenda. Congratulations on your appointment. I'd also like to thank all of you for the warm reception I've received in Madison. It's clear to me how much this community cares about education. While I have the opportunity, I also want to recognize Ed Hughes, the president of our Board of Education. Ed has encouraged me to become a member of Rotary. Yay, Ed. I've heard from quite a few of you that this is the place to be. So as soon as my schedule settles down, I plan to be a fully engaged member of this long-standing organization. As many of you know, I started as superintendent on April 1st, and since then I've been on a mission to learn as much as possible about our schools. I could tell you that I've learned an incredible amount. I've learned that we have many strengths that set our district apart. High-quality teachers, principals, and support staff, safe school environments that set the stage for raising the bar academically, and access to wonderful programs that make our schools unique. These are incredible strengths on which to build. But we also have our challenges. A continually changing set of priorities that has made it difficult for our educators to focus on the day-to-day work of teaching and learning. A culture of autonomy that has made it difficult to guarantee access for all students to a challenging curriculum. And a system that's hard for many of our parents and students to navigate, which results in too many of our students falling through the cracks. I've also learned that our district and our community has been engaged in a challenging conversation about our measurable results in student learning, often referred to as the achievement gap. A gap that's represented in the slides on these two walls. Our students, as a result of the school system we have created, are having vastly different school experiences with vastly different outcomes. Rather than call this an achievement gap, we should call it an opportunity gap. And it didn't start yesterday. There are plenty of parents with children directly challenged by this gap who've known about these differences for a long time. While difficult, it's a conversation that has finally forced everyone, community members, parents, district staff, to take the issue head on. That means that we're in a very unique time and place in Madison. I've actually never seen a community more ready than we are to raise the bar for all students and make the changes necessary to ensure that every student succeeds. But not only that, we actually have the ingredients to be successful. Every day I'm more and more sure that that's true. We can become a model for what it looks like when a community comes together to guarantee all of our students the opportunities that lead to their success. What I'm going to present today is a preview of our district's strategic framework, which will be released publicly tomorrow. So I'm going to try this out on all of you. The framework is essentially a statement of our goals, core values, approach to change, and major priorities moving ahead. My hope is that we can all use it to align our efforts. The framework was developed by a team of stellar teachers, principals, and central office staff using all the data that I collected during my entry phase, as well as the recommendations that were made by our team of national experts. As many of you know, I decided not to engage in another long, drawn-out strategic planning process. It was clear to me that the community was ready to move quickly towards action. At this point, I'd like to walk you through it. First, we identified a set of core values and beliefs that will guide us during the next phase of our work. From now on, we're going to be incredibly disciplined as a district. We're going to move away from the temptation of non-existent programmatic quick fixes and silver bullets. They don't exist. Instead, we're going to focus on doing what we know works and doing it well. If our teachers and principals are to do their best work, we must have the courage to be absolutely focused on a clear set of priorities and aimed at measurable goals. Great teaching and leadership matters. That's because great teaching is the single most important factor in raising student achievement. From now on, we're going to keep teaching and learning at the center of all of our decision making. Great teaching, when well defined and supported, benefits all of our students and should serve as the foundation for our success. And great teaching doesn't happen without a great principal at the helm. If we're going to focus our efforts on supporting the teacher and principal and doing their best work, we can no longer try to operate as a top-down or turnkey system, attempting to mandate or micromanage effective teaching. It simply does not work. Within clear expectations for performance, we're going to empower our schools to do what is best for their students, and we'll build our support around their needs. We also believe that we must be engaged in a process of continuous improvement aimed at results at every level of the system. In structured settings, we'll be regularly meeting to discuss where we're successful, where we need to improve, collaboratively identify the root causes for our successes and challenges, remove barriers as needed, and identify clear next steps. Finally, we'll embrace a new culture of excellence, precision, and integrity in everything we do. In our discussions about children, our actions, and our outcomes, our students and families deserve nothing less. With those beliefs as the backdrop, we've defined a new vision for Madison Schools. It's bold but simple. Every school will be a thriving school that prepares every student to graduate college, career, and community ready. You may ask, what do we mean by thriving school? A thriving school is one in which every student and adult is recognized for their strengths, challenged to do better, and supported to succeed. Organized around collaborative work and mutual accountability, a thriving school is also clearly focused on preparing all students for life after high school. What does it mean to be college, career, and community ready? It means that students are prepared with the academic skills necessary to be problem solvers and critical thinkers, but it also means that they have the social and emotional skills necessary to be successful after high school as well, as the cultural competence and interpersonal skills to be ready for full participation in the community. As you can imagine, the concept of a thriving school was something that we thought might be difficult to measure. After much discussion, we decided to focus on three overarching goals that counterbalance each other. First, we're going to measure ourselves on the extent to which every student is on track to graduate. Second, we'll measure ourselves on the extent to which every student has access and participates in a challenging and well-rounded curriculum. And last, we'll measure ourselves on the extent to which every student, family, and employee experience the district as a customer service-oriented organization. We need to measure and be held accountable for each of these essential pieces if our schools are truly going to thrive. So now the big question is, how do we get there? And what will be different this time? As I mentioned earlier, instead of imposing a plan from the district level and implementing it at all schools, our approach starts with the school at the center. In a district with high-quality teachers and principals like ours, the role of the central office should be to guide, support, and hold schools accountable, but not to mandate or micromanage. The work of the central office should be designed around the work of schools, ensuring that principals and staff have the support and resources to meet the needs of their students within clearly defined parameters. In order for that to happen, all schools in our district will be required to develop a school improvement plan aimed at measurable goals beginning this fall. This plan will be developed by the school in collaboration with central office and with input from the school community, using a strict process of analysis that focuses the school on only the most high-leverage actions for raising student achievement and accelerating the achievement of students that are underperforming. While each school improvement plan will be tailored to meet the individual school's needs, there will be a consistent and long-term learning focus that permeates all of our schools so that all educators are focused on the nuts and bolts of good instruction. This long-term learning agenda focus includes, first, better understanding of the new Common Core state standards and other relevant standards so that we can raise the bar academically. Second, better understanding of a defined set of instructional practices so that teachers can better deliver instruction that meets the needs of all learners. And third, better use of data to monitor student performance along the way so that teachers can make adjustments to their instruction based on student needs. By getting better and better at planning instruction, teaching, and using data, every student in every classroom in every school in Madison will benefit. I guarantee it. While schools will be focused on implementing their school improvement plan and learning together about what good teaching and learning looks like in our district, our work at Central Office will be organized in 5 priority areas, all aimed at providing the tools, resources, and infrastructure needed for schools to execute on their school improvement plans. The 5 priority areas are as follows. While we expect teachers to make ongoing instructional decisions that are based on the needs of their students, it's critical that we provide them with the tools and resources they need to be successful. By establishing a coherent instructional program that better defines what teachers teach, how they teach it, how they assess it, and how they intervene when students struggle, we will ensure that all of our students have obtained the knowledge and skills necessary for full participation in college, the workplace, and the community. I'm not suggesting that we provide our teachers with a script, but many of our teachers are exhausted from developing every resource from scratch, and ultimately, it's our students that suffer. While our high schools have many strengths, too many of our students are losing interest, losing their way, and dropping out. To combat this, it's essential that the district ensures the rigor and relevance of all coursework, especially at the high school level. This must include ongoing opportunities for students to explore college and career pathways, more opportunities for students to take advanced, dual credit, and online coursework, as well as more alternative pathways for students who just need something different. We are ready to partner with colleges and businesses to truly be bold and reinvent the high school experience so that students are engaged in their learning and have multiple options upon graduation. Families and community members are essential partners in our success, but the truth is we haven't honored them as our partners. That's going to change. We want everyone to be able to demand the very best from us. As a district, we will provide guidance, tools, and resources to schools to increase effective engagement. When schools engage with parents and communities in authentic and mutually supportive ways, parents and communities will be able to ask questions, make decisions, and expect the best from their schools for their children and all children. When we align our efforts and everyone has a charge, educators, parents, community members alike, children will benefit. Employee morale has been low in recent years. And I believe strongly that our students will not thrive unless the adults are thriving as professionals. We believe that it's our job to create a work environment that's challenging and rewarding. When we hold high expectations for all employees and support them in meeting those high expectations, morale and performance increases dramatically. We also need a talented workforce that better represents the diversity of our student population. We are ready to take a comprehensive, deep look at our workforce and truly focus on talent development as opposed to transactional HR functions. At the system, school, and classroom levels, we need to be held accountable for the work that we do. But accountability seems to become a bad word when it doesn't have to be. Central office departments, schools, and school teams must become more disciplined about using data to define our goals, creating plans for achieving them, implementing those plans, and reflecting on our outcomes so that we can make adjustments along the way. We will not be successful without holding ourselves and each other accountable for playing our particular functions in the organization well. Finally, all of this work will take hold through new ways of working that we're establishing fundamental to continuous improvement. First, we're launching an advisory structure that ensures that we're getting a regular reality check from critical stakeholders about how the work is taking hold in our schools. Second, all of our work will be executed by teams that work across central office departments and across levels of the system to ensure that our work is highly coordinated and informed by school staff. And last, we'll hold ourselves accountable for progress through formal quarterly reviews of progress. We've got to change the way we work in order to see real results. Much of what you've heard today may not seem particularly new or flashy. I realize that, because it isn't. The day-to-day work that makes real change and yields results for all students, it isn't flashy. It's not about an array of new programs or initiatives, and it's not about a big price tag. It's about the hard work of staying focused on teaching and learning, despite the myriad of distractions that could pull us away from this focus. Like I said earlier, the wonderful news about Madison is that we have all of the ingredients to be successful. A united Board of Education, educators committed to doing whatever it takes to serve our children, parents, community members, organizational leaders who are ready to help, and our greatest asset, the 27,000 students we serve, all of whom dream of bright futures. With urgency, determination, and tenacity, I know we can make a significant impact on bringing those dreams to life. Thank you.
We'll like to take questions. Please line up behind the two microphones, and we'll take turns going left and right.
Guys.
Thank you. 30 years ago, the district closed 12 downtown neighborhood schools and initiated busing and ferrying four more. The rationale then was economy of scale, integration, and reduction of the achievement gap, which are still problems, major problems. Would you ever consider it appropriate to reassess the educational value of busing young children away from home and compare it to the value of access to traditional neighborhood schools?
Excellent question. I think we'll always reassess what we do. I think that goes without saying. One of the major assets of our school system that I've identified in my few months on the job has been the tremendous diversity in all of our schools. It's really unusual. I know, having come from Chicago, our schools were extremely segregated. And that's not the case in Madison. I would hate to undermine the work that's been done to make sure that all of our schools are as diverse as they are. I think that's part of what makes students college and career ready, their ability to interact with students that are different from themselves, to learn about different cultures. So I guess the short answer is yes, we could potentially reassess. But I would want to do it carefully to make sure that we're not undermining something that I think is a real asset for a school system.
Hi, welcome to Madison. Thank you for your presentation. I'm Roberta Gassman. I was pleased to hear your comment about wanting all of our students to have bright futures. And my question is, since we want our students to be able to support themselves economically, and since our employers need a future workforce, can you speak to briefly what's happening in the schools to connect kids, many of whom don't have computers at home, don't have parents who might be using the internet or are computer savvy? What are we doing to connect those kids with technology?
Okay, great question. There's a lot actually in your comment that went before the question, but I'll try to focus just on technology. I actually don't think we're doing enough in this area. We haven't had a clear vision and plan around the integration of technology in our school system, which is something we need to tackle, and we're going to be actually tackling really in the next several months. our hope is to be able to bring a long-term technology plan and vision to our school board, I would say by December at the latest. It's an issue because the achievement gap is in part, it's related to the digital divide, too. You know, students who don't have access to technology really suffer nowadays. So I guess all that is to say it's an issue for us. I think because our schools have been working as highly autonomous units, we see really differences from school to school when it comes to access to technology. Sandburg is an example of an elementary school in particular that I use often that is making major strides in integrating technology across classrooms and really using it in very meaningful ways for instruction. And then we have other schools where there's virtually nothing. So we really have to take charge of the work in that area. So thank you for that question.
We saw the numbers on what's been called the achievement gap. When we start calling it the opportunity gap, what do those numbers have to become in order for you to regard your effort as successful? How soon will that opportunity gap start to narrow? When you come back in 1 year or 3 years or 5 years, what does it have to be for you to consider it a success?
That's such a good question. We're in the middle of goal setting as we speak. We just had a big conversation about this yesterday. I think I couldn't actually give you a number today, although I'd like to be able to give you guys a ballpark number fairly soon. And it clearly depends on what metric you're using, right? The achievement gap issue looks different depending on the measure. I know from experience and having studied urban district reform around the country for some time that this stuff does not happen overnight. So I need everyone to know that and to understand that it's not like flipping on a light switch. This is, all the things that I described will be things that we're going to be moving on aggressively, but there's also, this is also about cultural change, right? It's about changing values and beliefs in our workforce, among our educators, but I think as a community, as a whole. So, I think in my experience, you can begin to see narrowing of the achievement gap actually quite soon. I would imagine to see some progress even a year from now, and certainly in a couple years from now. And I think over time, we will expect more and more aggressive closure of that gap as our plan gets up and running. But I just want people to know that sustainable, long-term reform that actually changes values and beliefs, it takes time. The two major urban districts, sorry to go on a little bit here, but I think it's important. The two districts that are probably the models for sustainable change in an urban district that has led to gap narrowing, certainly not closure, are probably Long Beach in California and potentially Boston. And those superintendents were in their jobs for 10 years with a stable school board. You see that look at Ed? Intense. But that's what it takes. So I guess that's the best answer that I can give at this point.
Thank you for your presentation and for hitting the ground running like you have.
Thank you.
It's refreshing to see you do that. My name is Nancy Young, and having worked for the Madison Schools for many years and probably seven superintendents.
Oh my gosh.
I'm interested in knowing what kind of opposition you're running into for your plan.
None. The truth is I haven't run into opposition so far. I think when you talk with people honestly and you take a real common sense approach about things, it tends to resonate with the educators, with families. So I haven't experienced direct opposition. I've certainly gotten tough questions. Questions about what's different. Questions, certainly challenging questions about our budget recently. They're tough questions, but I don't see that as opposition. I see that as engagement.
And I want to say that I think the best superintendents we've had have made friends with John Matthews.
I was John and I are hanging out. Let's put it that way.
Jen, thanks again for being here. I was at a conference last week on suburban poverty, and one of the speakers made the statement, supported by some facts, that the biggest predictor of student achievement was actually peers, the achievement of peers, rather than any of the other measures that we've looked at, poverty and performance of schools and everything. I'm wondering if you agree with that theory, and if so, how you would apply that in the plan that you've outlined for us today.
I would have to look at it to tell you what my opinion would be, my informed opinion. I think my general reaction is that the causes that factor into the achievement gap, I mean, it's very complex. It worries me when people oversimplify it and immediately equate it to issues of poverty, for example. There's a pretty darn strong research base that shows that the quality of teaching is what has the highest impact on student learning and the highest effect on narrowing the achievement gap. So I think this is interesting. It may factor into the analysis on what we do about busing. If we need kids to interact with students that are outside of their normal group, peer group, that's something worth considering. So I'll take a look at it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, and I wish you the best in your challenges ahead. As my fellow Rotarians know, I'm concerned also about another achievement gap. That is the U.S. versus the rest of the world.
Yeah. And
given I spend most of my time in the marketplace outside the States, you can really see it all over the place. And so I would urge that as you set goals and define excellence and achievement, that you don't forget that our kids overall are number 30 in the world in math and science and reading and so forth, and that indeed when you do reach success, it's success that will be relevant for our kids to get jobs in the global marketplace. So please don't forget that achievement gap either. Thank you and good luck.
Oh, thank you so much. Can I make a comment on that real quick? I think this is it's extremely important to consider as we think about our plan moving ahead. People have often heard me talk about the promise of the new Common Core state standards that have been adopted by the state of Wisconsin. I don't think they're perfect, but I think that they present a tremendous opportunity to do what was just described. Those standards are a new description of what students should know and be able to do at every grade level through high school in preparation for after high school, and they were created through benchmarking, not just within the United States, but internationally. And, for example, the math standards in the U.S., we've typically gone very wide but very not deep when it comes to math instruction, meaning we cover a lot of topics within a single year, but we don't go deep and really build conceptual understanding. In Japan, there may be, I don't know, up to 10 major subjects that are covered in a typical year of instruction math versus, you know, over 20, probably more than that in a typical United States classroom. The new Common Core, one was around our core instructional program, and specifically where we were with implementation of the new Common Core state standards. Second, I wanted to learn about the state of professional learning and support for our educators. I wanted to learn about hiring practices, kind of, what was happening with the HR function in general, talent development in our district. And I wanted to learn something about accountability and performance management routines, right? How did we know that the things we were investing our time and energy in were actually paying off? Those were, in general, were the four categories. So the transition team worked over a couple months' time, came to the district in and out to collect information, process it together, and they delivered us a report about several weeks ago now. They're actually going to be in town this Friday to work through the recommendations with our staff. What was most surprising? There wasn't a whole lot that was surprising to me. The reason I chose those areas was because they arose as concerns for me. So I was driving the agenda. I wanted them to look into things that I was specifically concerned about. I think the most alarming thing was around hiring practices and evaluation. Team who hadn't had an evaluation in 7 years. Principals who hadn't had an evaluation in multiple years. You know, not to mention central office staff. You know, who knows when that may have happened. That's not a high-performing organization. It just simply does not function in that way. So I think that was probably the most alarming and something we're, of course, going to be moving quickly on. Okay. All right.
All right. Welcome, and thank you so much for being in dialogue with us here today. My name is John Quinlan, and I recently started with an organization called the Center for Families, and resonated with the presentation that you were giving earlier, that this, the importance of engaging parents in their investment in their children in the schools. I think it just stands out for me, and I think one of the challenges that's something I hadn't really thought of so much, but when parents themselves have had a difficult experience in the schools, for a variety of reasons, there are extra challenges to overcome. Do you have thoughts on how to do that, and I guess also engaging other adults who may be important in a child's life into success?
Absolutely. You know, this arose immediately as one, it had to be one of our priority areas because of the things that you're describing. I met with a lot of parents over those first few months, and what I was hearing from many of them was that it wasn't because they didn't want to be engaged in their child's educational experience, but they felt that they were really being held at arm's length in some respects. But there were barricades for them to be able to engage in a meaningful way. I had a wonderful conversation with a group of Hmong parents, for example, who told me that they couldn't figure out how to call in to say that their child was sick because they couldn't speak English. So those are basics, right? So as we think about our approach to parent engagement.
This podcast was published by schoolinfosystem.org.